Hi friends, this is Shadima, also known as the Type A Hippie, and this is the Type A Hippie podcast, CheekCast, episode 22. So, I am on with Erica Spiegelman, and she is the author of an amazing book called Rewired, A Bold New Approach to Addiction and Recovery. And so, we have yet to meet, but I'm sure we will. She's in California while I'm here in Michigan. And so, Erica, welcome.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be connected with you. Very meant to be. I'm so excited.
Very meant to be. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we just did a pre-call, friends, because we do that just to connect. And it's almost like old friends just picking back up, even though we've never spoken before. But I'll tell you, when I read the book, as many of you know from listening to the podcast, I felt really empowered and really channeled and directed by the divine to start doing more in terms of helping others and eliminating some of the stigma attached to substance use disorder or alcoholism addiction. Mm-hmm. And when I moved here and I finally landed back in my hometown of Ann Arbor, I went full force. Like, how can I participate, you know, and sitting on panels and helping the professional community. You know, I'm a pre-med post-bac student. And then I landed on your book after hearing you on another podcast with Anna David and a dear friend, David Ratchford, as well. And I was like, I need to talk to her. And I read your book by then, and I'm like quoting it to everyone. And so tell us more about you, Erica.
Thank you. Oh, it's so like warms my heart, because really writing Rewired was such a labor of love for me.
Oh, I'm sure.
It really was. It was something that like had to come out. Like, I didn't care whether I self-published it. I mean, luckily I got published by a bigger publishing house, but like, it, you know, for me it was a year of just no. Who are you? You're a first time author. We don't know who you are. We like the book, but we don't know, you know, you need more social media, you know, all this crazy stuff that, you know, kind of makes us feel validated these days, but it was kind of crazy. And yeah, I, you know, I'm really grateful that it did all work out. Like you said, the divine has a plan. And, you know, it all started really when I got sober. I changed my life. It'll be 10 years coming up. So it's 9.5 years. And 9 years ago just changed my life in so many amazing ways. Felt like I was reborn. Sure. Was you know, drinking and kind of experimenting with drugs since I was 13. Nothing, you know. Well, I mean, I, you know, not overly problematic, but pretty problematic and pretty regular, even as a teenager. And then after college, I moved to New York City. I went to school at University of Arizona and somehow got through it and graduated drinking every day there, every day, because it was just a huge party school. And I already knew that I was in love with alcohol. But when I moved to New York and I started working there and going out all night, every night, and just burning the candles at every end. And, you know, before I knew it, I was like in a deep depression and extremely disconnected, spiritless, hopeless, just really unhappy. And, you know, thank God for my mother, because she would not stop the nagging until I got help. I mean, it took years for her to finally get through to me. But she did eventually, and I did get help. So, you know, that's when everything changed, you know. And it was just, you know, a blessing to be able to go back to school, UCLA. I knew right away. I knew actually the first week I was in treatment, I was like, I'm going to be a counselor. I'm going to start helping people like professionally. And it was bizarre how it just came. And then, you know, with that being said, I started helping people, individuals, families, working at treatment centers, certified, you know, by the state, and just became a clinician at these amazing treatment centers out in Los Angeles, and felt the need to write Rewired because I felt like there wasn't really a book about emotional awareness and about your core values and about how your principles really have to change. You know, like when you change your life and so many levels and your behaviors change, and, you know, stuck to like our old behaviors defining who we are, we think we are. So that's what I wanted to write about, you know, and that's where Rewired came from. And it was about how I changed my life through learning about the principles of authenticity and honesty and having healthy relationships and solitude. And, you know, those are all the chapters in my book. So I wanted to write something like that. And I was literally joined college, so it was like full circle. You know, I finally was able to write, which was my biggest passion since I was a little girl.
I love that. As I was reading it, well, it's so interesting. So I'm the president of, or co-president, I should say, of Students for Recovery at University of Michigan. And we sat on a panel, some of us, and they were talking about, along with some collegiate recovery programs, with the program leaders at our school, and they were talking about how there's 7,000 students that don't drink for whatever reason. Some are on medication, some have religious reasons. And I was like, what? Where were these people? You know, because to your point, I mean, Michigan's not known as a party school. However, I think one of the cultural things is that, I mean, and by culture, I mean like American culture, college, is that you go, you're no longer under the rule and thumb of your parents, right? And you get to go and kind of live your life and be the adult that you think you've always wanted to be, but it's on your terms. And there's booze everywhere and anywhere, and you don't have to be 21 to get it. And so I totally hear what you're saying. And so learning about more collegiate settings, you know, and academic settings and what that looks like in terms of recovery and being a proponent or a safe space for students that need that additional assistance. Because I always say to people, and I think you've said it too on one of the podcasts, many of us are in recovery from something, right? And so determining what that is and what is the best case, the best plan for that is really important. So I wanted to actually talk about a couple of things in Rewired. You were talking about, I like this idea of values. There was something in the beginning, and I don't know exactly the page, and you could probably, because it's your child that you birthed, you probably know exactly where it is, where you were talking about when you first got sober and stopped drinking. You had tried a couple different like recovery communities and none of them really fit or felt authentic to you, which I thought was a bold move. Actually, because so many people feel like there's only one way, whether it's 12-step recovery and there are multiple pathways. And that like health was really important to you and kind of drawing an alignment, you know, the actions to defining what's important to you and then having alignment with your life, right? Can you tell us more about that? Because I remember you talking about running and maybe it wasn't 5 a.m, but you would run every morning and that was really important to you and kind of some of the other things, like walk us through your days in early recovery for you and then like where you are now. Things have slightly changed or tweaked and more of yourself.
Totally. Yeah. Well, two things first, like what you were talking about before is like, living a congruent life, I think was really important. Sure. Like doing what I felt was honoring myself, you know, and not betraying myself was like the first non-negotiable, which I never did when I was in my addiction. Like I was not, you know, honoring myself. I was always waking up feeling like, how could I do this again to myself? You know, I wasn't living a congruent life. What was really in my heart, I was not, you know, I was not living that out, and treating myself, you know, disrespectfully was also just a horrible feeling. So yeah, that's, you know, that's why, you know, part of my recovery plan was in the beginning, to value, you know, value congruency. It was also, like you said, to, have a like non-negotiable routine for myself. Like running was, you know, I did it in a healthy way. I wasn't running too much. I was running 30 minutes a day, but I was running every morning because I would get up. I would honor my body that way. It was a meditation for me. And then, you know, it was a half an hour of my time, really not a huge investment of my day. And then I would feel like, oh my God, I took care of my body. I took care of my mind. You know, while at the end of my run, I would go through, you know, at a certain spot, I knew I had about 7 more minutes of my run. I would go through my gratitude list. What was I grateful for today? Really connect. And as I was moving, like it was such a powerful experience for me to be moving, to be spiritually connected out in nature, to be mindful of what I was grateful for that day, of my blessings, and to feel that all in my heart at the same moment was just, it would, I still get overwhelmed thinking about it today, because it was like, it brings tears to my eyes that like I was allowed to get this chance again, you know, this right. chance at life. It was just so powerful, and I didn't want to give that up in the beginning. So I was very adamant about, you know, my time and boundaries with my family and with anyone that was in my life. If I was dating somebody, it was like, hey, babe, I got to go take a run. You know, we're on vacation, but bring you my running shoes. Or, you know, I want to go to bed by 11:30. Like, I'm not getting any less than like 6-7 hours of sleep. Like, you know, I just had these non-negotiables of what it was that made me feel like I was taking care of myself.
That's awesome. And I like that you said too that, excuse me, that it wasn't too much or too little. Like it was that was a safe space, because that's how my yoga is for me. It's a moving meditation. And when I teach it as well, that's what I teach, that, you know, you're in alignment with your breath. You're connected to your breath, your body, your spirit, your soul. Right. And, nature is like that too for me, where I can look up and things can be seemingly all wrong. And I look up and I see the sunshine in just a perfect way. And it changes things around. And I'm like, okay, I'm on the right track. It's all good. Even if this is painful right here and right now, it's totally all good. I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be. So how did your family respond to not only you getting sober, but now setting some boundaries in terms of how you chose to use your own time?
Yeah, I mean, it was very frustrating, actually, at first. My mom was like, just, she didn't understand the importance of the boundaries. She didn't understand the importance of the routine, I guess, because the routine wasn't like you said, too. Now, I forgot to answer the second part of your question, but now, you know, like, I was so much more adamant about keeping that intact than now. Through the years, I went away somewhere and I didn't have access to running. Like, I was in China. I couldn't run in China. I didn't know it was in Beijing. Like, I didn't, you know, my mom's like, you're not running in China. You know, and I was like, fine, I'm going to find the workout room here. And then the workout thing was broken. And I started slowly being like, Erica, if you don't, you know, I was running like 5 or 6 days a week, but still, like, I went like a week without running, and, you know, my body didn't really change. I didn't feel that terrible. I got back on it when I got home. And so I started to see through time and experience that I could lean in a little bit in a different way. It wasn't that it was like I was obsessed because of the physical piece of it. It was more of like, I don't want my sobriety to dwindle away. And so I was trying to protect the sobriety piece. And I got to see through the years that staying out till 2 a.m, I'll be fine. You know, I may be tired, but I'll be fine. My sobriety is not going to be in jeopardy. Or, you know, like, there's just so many different things now. Like, even with, I was so, you know, serious about not eating certain foods and being really healthy. And now, you know, I don't care about those things. I'll eat dessert. It won't bother me anymore. So, like, I'm much more, I feel safe, very safe within what my life is like now. But it's taken, you know, it took a couple years. I think it was my third year where I started to allow things to kind of drop off and take a new shape, and, you know, that kind of thing. But back to your question about my family, it took them a while too to kind of understand that, like, I'm serious, I'm fighting for my life, and these things aren't here for me to be a pain in your butt. It's here for me to save my own life. And I had to explain that time and time again. That's why I tell my clients too, like, you know, you may like verbalize a boundary, you may communicate that, but they may not hear it right away. You may have to do that 20 times.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't mean that they're going to change just because you're changing.
Right. That's very true. And you know what? I think that's one of the, I feel like there's a shift happening in the world. Definitely. There are some changes happening right in our country, but I think overwhelmingly a lot of people are realizing that it's extremely important to be authentic. You know, Brené Brown's done a lot of work around authenticity and vulnerability and transparency, and people are not feeling so good when they're doing something that's inconsistent with what they claim, right? And so for me, I have a loving life coach, and, you know, sometimes she'll play back to me, relay back to me what she hears me say. And it's so funny when you know, and I've since started to like in conversation, I'll actually be like a third party listening in to my conversation to, you know, see how I am interacting with other people. And sometimes I can't see it, right? Especially if I'm not in tune and especially if I'm not paying attention. And other times I just don't want to see it because I want to be correct. And so we talked this morning, actually. We connect about once a week. And she said, well, have you flipped that around yet? And I'm like, no. Well, help me. Just help me flip it. You know, because now at this point, I don't really care so much about being right as much as I care about feeling really comfortable in my own skin. And that adage of to thine own self be true, you know, really being true and authentic. I was looking, I tagged you on a photo that I took. I was doing a Instagram yoga challenge, and this was a quote from you. It says, the voice of the authentic self is a wise and intuitive knowing that resides in all of us like a steady candle flame guiding the way. It whispers to us in dreams, revealing to us our purpose in life and alerting us when we have done or said something incongruent with our values. It informs our decisions on a moment-to-moment basis if we take the time to consult with it. And so that was like one of my favorite quotes in Rewired is that, you know, when we do take that time, and you mention it, one of the values is solitude. One of your themes is solitude. And I would say solitude and time management work really well together because when I plan my week on Sundays, right, and I take that time and I get out my passion planner, which I absolutely love. If you don't have one, get one, unless you really love your planner because it's part planner and part journal. But I get it out and I plan my week and I put in hot yoga. You know, that is what I need, especially when it's 14 degrees outside. Mercy.
Oh, my God.
Right. Girl, it's horrible. But you lived in New York, so you know about the elements and braving the elements to get around.
Yes, totally. So, it's been a long time, but yes.
Totally. You remember, and you're like, I'm not coming back. But, So, yeah, I make sure I chunk in, like, my spiritual development pieces, you know, like, a way of life for me and what I do for that. And then I also put in my more physical practice, which I think is still for me spiritual because it's an opportunity for me, like you were mentioning with the running, to be grateful, you know, whether it's a gratitude list or actually just having the feeling of gratitude wash over you, like my body works. There's so many people that are praying every night for the very thing that we oftentimes complain about, you know? And so it puts things in perspective. Like if I'm saying that my thighs are too big, right? Or my stomach's not flat enough, there are people that are wishing for what I'm complaining about, and it does put things in perspective, you know, of, okay, what's really going on? Let me check in with myself, you know, talk to someone if I need to process and be told the truth and then, you know, move forward. So yeah. Okay. So what happened for you personally and professionally once Rewired was done? When it was out to the masses and to the public, what was the response?
It's been, you know, it was published April 28th, 2015. So it's been out a good, you know, year and change, year and 6 months. And it's been incredible. It's just, it's so amazing how many people have, you know, responded in ways that really have nothing. I mean, a lot of people that are obviously newly sober, family member sober, but there's a lot of people that responded that, like, I just got divorced and it really helped me. I had cancer. You know, I mean, a lot of Rewired is for everybody, like literally everybody. It's all, like you said, it's all about giving yourself healthy solitude. Well, that would be good for anyone, no matter what you're going through, you know, and being authentic is good for anybody. I don't care if you've never had that card dealt to you with the addiction card. Like, it could be, you know, you have anxiety or you have, you know, you had a family where your narratives were to be a certain way. Now you're climbing your own ladder, like whatever it is, you know, I just think that was really the beauty of having that published and having it get into so many hands was to hear from all these other people that I, you know, wasn't expecting to hear from. That was beautiful. And also the people that I was expecting to hear from, just, you know, having my words somehow relate to them and having it resonate. It's the greatest gift I could ever imagine getting, you know?
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, and I like what you just said about roles, because you talk about it early in the book about how when you had some trauma in your family, that you were always the one who was fine and taking care of everyone else. So it's no wonder you were thirsty and you needed to check out, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And so, so many people get stuck, I found, in whether it's a diagnosis, whether it's actual, you know, addiction. I know that for me, I started, this year is about the third year. So 3 years ago, I started a kind of like a multi-layered food, physical fitness type of, like, it was like a challenge, but it was not so much you won a prize as much as you won your health. And so for me, I had struggled with a 20-year eating disorder at that point. And mm-hmm. so I finally started to get more healthy in terms of body image and in terms of my relationship with food 3 years ago because of this, you know, community and changing some of the things that I was eating, meditation, and actually fasting, which I thought was going to be such a trigger for me because I had always restricted, and then mm-hmm. I had exercise bulimia as well, and so you could definitely see me, like, it would not be odd for me to be working out for hours and hours, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. like other unhealthy things, right, were happening in my life as well. And so when I did the fasting, it was the first time it was actually very spiritual. Like, I listened to, like, faith-based music, and I prayed a lot, and I let myself off the hook. I said, if this is too much, I'm going to stop, you know? And so I went 36 hours, because we had two different, it was a 12-week challenge, and we had two different opportunities to do fasting. So that was actually quite easy, and I still worked out too, you know? And I was, like I said, in community and talking to people and processing as I needed to. The second 24 hours, so one was 36 hours altogether and one was 24. The 24 hours was actually more of a challenge for me because I wasn't in gratitude. I wasn't connected to the divine. I wasn't meditating and praying. It was almost like I was kind of doing it all in my own might, like in my own strength kind of thing. And I was mm-hmm. like definitely fighting, you know, it just wasn't as go with the flow as the first go around. So that was also a lesson to me because I feel like all of it, I mean, you talk about a lot about the book, in the book, especially with the questions, which I thought were really well thought out questions of, you know, this is a learning exercise. Like, this thing called life, it's not something that we will always, will get to a point where we completely figure it out, right? It's like always evolving and growing and changing, and you're adding more and you might be taking out and all of that stuff. So mm-hmm. what is your favorite, this is probably going to be hard, what is your favorite kind of value in these 12 that you've listed? Or what do you think is like the best starting point? So I'll list them out to you guys if you haven't picked up the book yet, and I will include in the show notes how you can connect with Erica, of course, and where you can pick up this amazing book. So the chapters are, so chapter one is authenticity, chapter two, honesty, chapter three, evolution, four is solitude, five, time management, six, self-care, seven, healthy relationships, eight, gratitude, nine, compassion, 10, love, 11, affirmations and intentions, and 12 is hope.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing that. I think it's a tie between authenticity and self-care. Mm-hmm. Like, if I have to, like, pick one, I know it's difficult, but I think authenticity was it's the first chapter because it was the base, the foundation of the book. You know, I think right. It is the most important thing to speak your truth, to be the author of your own life, to honor yourself, to see your beauty, no matter what you look like, no matter what your size is, no matter what you know. think you're not, it doesn't matter. You're a gift, and you're given the talents and the mind and the wisdom and the body, everything you're given for a very specific reason. And to not sit in that and to not be proud of that and honor that, to me, is where we need to start. Like that's where I needed to start. That's where I think most people that come into my office and they're kind of just getting into their recovery or into what it is to be sober have to start with that, you know? So mm-hmm. I think that is the most important. And also to make sure that the relationships in your life feel authentic and that you're, romantic work wise, like are you working for somebody that you respect and that they respect you and they respect other people. I mean, right. It's just, there's authenticity is so, it's so important all around.
Sure. Yeah, no, I love that.
And then the self-care, obviously that's the basis of also getting sober or changing your life in a healthy way in general is to be compassionate and loving to yourself. Like, when I first also changed my life, I was like, I would take a shower and then I'd I would buy usually I would buy cheap lotion. And I was like, I'm going to get lotion that feels like real cocoa butter and mm-hmm. put lotion on myself and get in bed and, and then take care of myself and go work out and eat good food and splurge on organic apples and, I mean, just little things of self-care, stretching at night and, tiny things that all add up,
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I had someone who's a dear friend, the episode it went live this morning, and she uh-huh. was talking about, her name is Jennifer Simons, and she was talking about, for her, travel and manifestation is all related to self-care. And that was something that was really important to her, and a lot of times people feel like that's an indulgence, like they somehow don't deserve, it's like a worthiness thing, like, oh, I don't mm-hmm. deserve self-care. And self-care can be really simple, like you just said, about buying organic apples,
mm-hmm.
or, even if it's like writing for 5 minutes in the morning or in the evening or writing your gratitude list or I don't know. Like for me, one of the biggest things I used to ask my girlfriends in college, I was the one who had a car for the majority of college. And so I drove everyone around all the time. And my car was the pits. I'm telling you, it was a nice car, but I did not take care of it at all. And so I was always that person where it's like, oh yeah, I can give you a ride. And then you're waiting at the passenger side, waiting for me to move whatever was living there, on the seat and just toss it in the back. I didn't really care where it landed. I don't believe in shame, but it was just kind of shameful, that whole thing. And now that is not, I have a brand new car. Well, that's new to me. And no one ever has to wait for that. Very rarely, because my car is pristine. Because I care mm-hmm. about it. I can't say that I care about something and not take care of it. That's inconsistent. That's incongruent, really. When I think about that, I had another question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes. Okay. So when people are perhaps needing to make a change, what is your first suggestion for them? How do they, whether it's alcohol and drugs, maybe it's an eating disorder, maybe it is codependent or unhealthy relationships. What do you think is one of the biggest things that they can do? How do they get from the point of being hopeless, right? Of reaching out for help or crying out to help to getting help?
Well, I think you said three different, very different things, So I think they all have a different, and just my book's about, I think everything has a different recipe, know? With different ingredients, but I think overall, you said with drugs and alcohol, I mean, that is the first step is asking someone else for help because right. You're the mind that you hijacked, by is not the mind that's going to get you the help that you need. I mean, I certainly tried to help myself through it. Couldn't help myself. I helped myself once I became abstinent. The minute, you know, that's why, like, sometimes abstinence is key, number one, for the drug and alcohol addiction. You need to get your mind clear and the poison out of your system. Mm-hmm. You cannot be high helping yourself. But with that being said, you do have to ask someone else for help and sometimes get out of your environment. I think that's probably the biggest thing. For eating and for codependent relationships and things like that, I mean, I really like I am a big mindful person. Like I read books on mindfulness. The awareness for me is really important. Like writing, admitting and being aware of things is really important. So to be mindful that you have a problem or that you're aware that you have a problem. And then again, if help is necessary, to get help from professionals, therapists, counselors. There's some amazing people out there. You don't have to do, you know, any kind of program. It could just be connecting with an individual that has wrote a book that you like, or you know, or you watch their you listen to their podcast, or you watch mm-hmm. their TED talk. I mean, there's a lot of ways to reach out to people that, you know, kind of have more experience than you at that moment.
Right. I like that.
Yeah,
and I like your concept of whole soul makeover. I like that.
Uh-huh.
that idea, right? Because it paints a lovely picture of what can happen when someone does reach out for help in whatever area in which they need help. And the thing is, to your point, someone that has more experience in that particular area. So everyone brings mm-hmm. something to the table, right? Everyone is valuable. People who are in recovery are, mm-hmm. I think, overly valuable insofar as when they were not in recovery, they may have been taking a lot from society, but once they are in recovery, they give so much into society, almost as a, you know, I don't know, karmic or paying it forward type of thing I've found in the people that I've been in community with. But mm-hmm. yeah, it's like a whole soul, like a deep down, inside out type of, evolution and change.
Mm-hmm.
So it's awesome. Okay, so Erica's very busy and we could talk all night, I'm sure. So how do people get in contact with you? And again, friends, I will put this on show notes, but what's the best way, Erica, for people who may need your services and or want to get this amazing book? And you said that there's is the workbook out too already?
The workbook is out. Yep. You could find me. My website is ericaspiegelman.com, SPIEGELMANERICA, ericaspiegelman.com. The book Rewired is on Amazon, Barnes and Noble. You know, it's out there on the internet. So you could look up Rewired and my name, it'll come up. I have a workbook that is an excellent, like, guide. It will give you so many tips and tools. It will give you journaling assignments. It will give you ways of learning how to speak a boundary, learning how to implement self-care. There's just a lot in it. It's an amazing workbook that I co-wrote with another great woman named Marcia Stone, who owns some treatment centers in Austin, Texas. And so we wrote that. That's available at Hatherly Press. Their website, Hatherly, HATHERLEIGH, Hatherly Press's website right now. And then on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, it's a pre-order now for my coloring book. I have an adult Rewired coloring book coming out next month, February 28th. It'll be published by Penguin Random House, and it's going to be amazing. It's the most gorgeous images, and each page there is a value. So, like, you know, wisdom is the owl, and I give a little brief description of what each value means, like what integrity means, what loyalty means. There's 39 different emotions or values in that coloring book. And then you color, you know, the image with it and holding that intention of getting to know that emotion. Yeah. That's the purpose of the coloring book. So that's already out on Amazon for pre-orders. On my website, you know, I'll be doing a lot of, the next month, a lot of giveaways, and, you know, it'll be a great month to celebrate Rewired all around.
Awesome. And are you on social media?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram at E. Spiegelman. On Facebook, I have a business Facebook page. It's E. Spiegelman, too. Okay. And I put quotes up every day on Facebook. I put a lot of information out on my business page there. And, email me at Erica. It's Erica at ericaspiegelman.com, E-R-I-C-A. Yeah, and I do counseling over the phone. I do
good. Sessions. I was just going to ask. Do you, you know, Skype and phone and stuff like that? Okay.
Yep. Yep, that's what I'm doing next, and that's what I just did before I spoke with you. I have a lot of phone sessions, which are really cool because I work with people all over the country now.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's so important to stay connected. So thank you, Erica. I'm so glad that you are here with us, and we will definitely talk soon. And so before you go, we're just going to read a couple of stories from Humans of New York, the book, and then we'll close out in the usual way. So thanks again for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So there's a gentleman on the streets of New York, and he says, I have struggled with my weight my whole life. When I was 21, I decided I wanted to be skinny. I thought it was going to bring me love, happiness, everything I wanted. I barely ate. I exercised 3 times a day. I got down to 130 pounds, and I was more miserable than ever. I hated myself, and after that, I gave up on trying to be thin. Now I've gotten to the point where I have to lose weight again, but this time for my health. He's asked, are you lonely? It's been a lifetime of loneliness. I decided early on that I better get used to it. I go to movies by myself if the movie theater is completely empty. I'm even happier. I learned early on that if I wanted to go to restaurants, I better learn to go by myself. One benefit of being big is that people don't bother you. I'm shocked that you came up to me. Nobody's ever done that. When I started to go to therapy, it took me several sessions before I even spoke a word. I just sit there and cry, and honestly, you caught me on a tough day. I was sitting here feeling really bad about myself. I went to the doctor today, and I was sure that I'd lost weight, but I've gained some. And then the last one, a young girl, or appears to be a young girl, and she's sitting on a park bench, and she says, I've got an hour break between therapy and family therapy. If I put off an assignment until the last minute, the logical thing would be to just do it. Instead, I think maybe I should not go to school, not talk to anyone, curl up and be a little ball of sadness forever. I don't want to be happy because I don't think that's realistic, but I would like to be able to deal with life. And then she said, what's your greatest fear? Loneliness and suicide, and mainly loneliness. And then one more, because this one's sweet. So it's an elderly couple. And the author said, these two were acting like complete teenagers. When I walked up, she was nuzzling her head against his shoulder. She giggled the entire time I talked with them, while he kept a big goofy grin on his face. And whenever I asked about their relationship, she clutched his arm, looked at him just like this, giggled, then said, we're not telling. So that is sweet.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
So I honor the place within you where the entire universe resides. I honor the place within you of love, of light, of truth, of peace. I honor the place within you where when you are in that place in you, and I am in that place in me, there is only one of us. So remain blessed, friends. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day. Until we meet again, my name is Chidima, also known as the Type A Hippie. Namaste.